We have a new leader in Canada. Surprising election result up in Canada, supposedly. There is a new leader up in Canada, and so they have the descendant of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Justin Trudeau. So they've gone from conservative to liberal. The liberals in Canada got 40% of the vote, the conservatives 32%, and the rest on from there. But big deal, not obviously, there's parties go back and forth depending on what, what the latest trend is. But I would think that it's going to be a little bit different down here for us. I read a study that came out of, I need to get it for you guys because it was pretty interesting, but they looked at the popularity of the leader who is not going to stay in the party, a leader that is, like, say, term limited out, and to find out that basically, if the leader doesn't have at least 55% popularity, popular support, then their person who comes in behind them, even if the same party, even if they've been in office with them, and is not going to get elected, less than a 25% chance. And they did a study of all around the world on this, not just in America. So it is kind of interesting that we pretty much know, even whether Hillary gets in or not, we pretty much know that we're not going to have a Democrat in the office come the next opportunity, the next election. So get you a little bit here on Justin Trudeau, who looks kind of like a rock star, I guess. And it's going to be, I'm sure, more of the same policies, socialism stuff. Countries that have had a taste of socialism don't tend to have, it's like Greece. Once you've kind of tried it, I think it's impossible to turn your back on it, because socialism seems to offer everybody a, the whatever you want to call it, equality or whatever. It's the illusion anyway. So they're going to, well, I've got his victory speech here, but I don't know if you're interested in that. It's 25 minutes, so I'm going to assume you're not. And see, yeah, it's about 25 minutes, so I'm not going to play that, but I'll get a couple of clips here for you just so you have a feel for this guy. But he's a handsome, very handsome gentleman, tall, and new leadership in Canada, to say the least. And not just new leadership in the prime minister, but also the entire government is turned over. And I didn't I don't remember reading about that, so it's got to be a little bit of a surprise. Anyway, here's a little bit on the federal election up in Canada.
We're looking at who they're talking about. We know the leaders are being talked about a lot. We're on. There you go.
Yeah, amazing. That's why somebody was tapping me on my shoulder.
There we go. So who are people talking about as far as the leaders?
So it's been, Justin Trudeau obviously has picked up the bulk of the conversation. Twitter's the second screen where people are watching and tweeting at the same time. And that's the story of the night. There's no way around that. So that's what you're going to see. And here, there you go. 50% of the conversation. So one of every two tweets is about Justin Trudeau at this point. This is real time.
All right. So Justin got the most tweets. He got the most votes. Here we go. Watching the election from his house.
I think it's going to be You think they're going to do that?
Hey, my name. Are you winning
every day? Every day, they're going to do that.
All right, so that didn't amount to much, but here is just, well, anyway, so Justin Trudeau is a relative of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who used to lead Canada, and the upshot was that Pierre Elliott Trudeau was a very, very liberal guy. And he drew a lot of ire from down here in America. Now that we're more liberal in our society and our government, I don't think it's as big of a deal. Here is, well, let's, I tell you what, let me see if I can find some quality clips here for you. After the break, there was an NFL game last night, and it was the Eagles have kind of come back out of the wilderness because they're playing a lot better, and they scored a lot of points on the New York Giants, and although Sam Bradford, in my opinion, is not really a quality quarterback. He throws a lot of interceptions, but he is better than nobody. They're calling it a mistake-filled slop fest. 27 for the Eagles in New York, 7, but they're in first place. They're tied for first place, and so you can't really argue with that outcome. And 3-3, so, you know, it's not unusual for that particular division to have a lot of mediocre teams. If the Eagles continue to win, they'll build on their momentum, and then you can't really argue with that. Here is a little bit from that game.
Well, maybe it was their night.
ODB!
Wasn't meant to be. Odell Beckham.
Did that hamstring work out?
Injured hammy that he injured at the end of the San Francisco game in week 5.
He was warming up.
Boy, how good did Eli look in this offense? Right to Beckham at the start.
80 yards right down the field.
No huddle.
Yeah. I mean, they picked him apart.
And then everything turned. The bottom completely fell out. Unbelievable to see.
What a play.
D'Amico Ryan.
Linebacker Willie.
This is a great play by D'Amico, but you know, as a tight end, you got to be able to fight for the football.
You got
that football in here. He doesn't attack the football, and I understand.
All right, so anyway, I'm not finding the kind of clips that I think you want to hear. 27-7, a lot of mistakes in the game. There were interceptions by the Eagles that turned into touchdowns for them, and the Eagles also had some pretty good play. But the main thing is they're on top, and a couple of weeks ago, people were completely writing them off. All right, so let's. We got Walt Rubel coming in a few minutes, but got a few stories for you next. I'll have something on Justin Trudeau. 6:15 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, this is Robin Roberts, and I just want to alert you to a documentary that will be shown on Frontline tonight from KRWG at 8 Mountain Time. And the subject is the immigration battles. And my daughter is the producer, and I have witnessed 14 years of her working on this. A documentary has to be an eyewitness of the account, and nothing can be fabricated. So it takes forever to make them because it involves tremendous travel to be at the event. But this makes the viewer an eyewitness which makes it really riveting to watch.
I'm familiar with the documentary format. So what time is it on?
8 o'clock on Channel 22, KRWG. I just wanted to alert you to the fact that it will air tonight.
Okay. Great. I appreciate the call. I'll make an announcement.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a nice night. Or a nice day.
Bye-bye.
Sorry. Bye. All right, so Kelly here, it is 6:19, October 20th. Man, we're we're steaming into November. It's really stunning, isn't it? The way this time is flying by. And so I've got a little bit on your election up in Canada. And then a little bit on your football game there. So here's a couple of clips, just real brief clips for you here. But on this this election wave, it was a wave election, and it went across the country, and it really, I think, surprised some of the commentators. Check this out.
So the Liberals, led by Justin Trudeau, will topple Prime Minister Stephen Harper's Conservatives. Canada's major television networks are projecting a majority for the Liberals. The projected win ends the Conservatives' 9-year run in power. The victory would mark a major turn in political fortunes. The Liberals had been a distant third-place party in Parliament before this election. The result reflects a political shift away from Harper's fiscal and cultural conservatism. Liberal leader Trudeau has pledged to run a $10 billion Canadian dollar annual budget deficit for 3 years to invest in infrastructure and help stimulate economic growth. Trudeau has also vowed to help repair Canada's cool relations with the Obama administration, withdraw Canada from the combat mission against the Islamic State, and tackle climate change.
So they're going to withdraw Canada against the from the war against ISIS. That's kind of sad. Here's a little bit more on this election.
I didn't make history tonight. You did. And don't let anyone tell you any differently. I know that I am on stage tonight for one reason and one reason only, because you put me here. Canadians have spoken. You want a government with a vision and an agenda for this country that is positive and ambitious and hopeful. Well, my friends, I promise you tonight that I will lead that government.
All right, so this guy is the son of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who was the prime minister for a number of years and was kind of a jet setter, really. Went to Studio 54, that type of thing. All right, so here is a little bit from your game last night, Giants versus Eagles.
Wasn't meant to be. Odell Beckham injured hammy that he injured at the end of the San Francisco game in week 5.
Everybody's warming up.
Boy, how good did Eli look in this offense? Right to Beckham at the start.
80 yards right down the field.
No huddle.
Yeah. I mean, they picked him apart.
And then everything turned. The bottom completely fell out. Unbelievable to see.
What a play by D'Amico.
Linebacker Willie.
This is a great play by D'Amico, but you know, as a tight end, you got to be able to fight for the football. You got
ball.
That football in hand. He doesn't attack the football, and I understand it's a great play by Ryan, and that's what you're supposed to do as a linebacker, but fight. Put up a fight. Knock it loose so nobody gets you.
And don't give it up like that.
This is Philly's ensuing drive. A 3rd and 10. Sam Bradford drops back, hits Darren Sproles, is tackled short of the marker, but a flag on the field. And this was a sign of things to come.
DeMontre Moore right here.
This play is so gummy head. It's ridiculous.
But the drive would stay alive, and Bradford, to his credit, on a pass that was slightly underthrown, caught by Riley Cooper for the touchdown. As the Eagles make a pay for
turning the point. Yeah. I mean, the Giants were off the field. They allowed to extend the drive, first down 15 yards, and took advantage of it.
Eagles coming off their best offensive performance last week, 500-plus yards of offense in that win over New Orleans, and then a pick six.
That's Nolan
Carroll.
Yeah, they're just sitting in the zone. And they just...
All right. So anyway, this game was not the best hour for the Giants, but I saw Tom Brady. I saw him performing at the highest level at the beginning of this year, over 70% completions. He's got one interception that came from Julian Edelman, his receiver, who had broken a finger and the ball popped up in the air. It wasn't an interception throw, but the receiver mishandled the ball so badly he popped it up in the air to the defender, and the defender ran it into the end zone. But Tom Brady has one interception. They're 5-0. The Broncos are 5-0. The North Carolina Panthers are 5-0. Green Bay. So you've got a number of undefeated teams. It's a pretty good year. For the NFL. But, you know, with a lot of these surveys coming out, and so people are, these medical tests, most people playing the NFL have brain damage. And so this kind of makes me wonder what the long-term viability of the league could be. We'll take a little break here. I want to come back and talk to you somewhat about Paul Ryan. And by the way, I got a phone call from Robin. Her daughter has helped put together a frontline documentary on immigration. She said she's been working on it for 10 or 15 years, 20 years, whatever it was. Sounds exhaustive. It's 8 p.m. tonight on Channel 22. So anyway, 625 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 on KOBE. 523-1450, and can I come back and have a little chat about Paul Ryan?
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, a crying old time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, a crying all the time.
All right, so there's a question out there as to who will be the new Speaker of the House. And there's a couple of things that are up, one of which is this issue with the Freedom, this group in the House that is called the Freedom Party or whatever. And I'm trying to find their name in here. I just open up a page on it, and it went haywire. It started playing an ad over and over again. So, the Freedom Caucus, and it is a historic, what they're calling a historic rebellion. And I want to get into this story from Politico. I don't know why they've got this. So many of these pages that you open up have this maniacal ads that just pop up and you can't even shut them down. But anyway, the Freedom Caucus's unprecedented insurgency, and at least since the Civil War, there hasn't been a faction fighting both parties at the same time. So what is the Freedom Caucus? You've got to associate it with the Tea Party. Now, what is the Tea Party? We had talked about this before. The Tea Party was the group that came off the floor of MSNBC when there was a call from, I can't remember even the guy's name, Jim Agnelli or whatever, saying that we needed a new Tea Party. And so the Tea Party is essentially, put all the rhetoric aside, the Tea Party looks for two things: less taxes, smaller government. So the Tea Party, then when it gets involved in a party, of course, that's closer to the Republican Party. So the Tea Party supported Republican candidates, as most people know. Now there is some fruit paying off for this. These people who got into, national election, federal level offices, and they wanted to see some results. And so it's not always the group with the Democratic majority. Sometimes it's the group with the most conviction. So the Politico is saying that it's a rebellion, and Jeffrey Cabaservice, a professional researcher for a centrist GOP group called the Main Street Partnership, says it's an unusual and unprecedented development in the history of the party because it's going back to the conservative values that animate the, conservative movement. So not just lower taxes, not just smaller government, it's also demanding that we go after, for example, the abortion problem. And the abortion problem is a couple of things. Number one, recently, Planned Parenthood has been in the news because of supposed breaking of the law. But I mean, more fundamental than that to the conservatives and the Tea Partiers is the idea behind abortion is that fetuses that are unwanted need to be killed and disposed of. And so within this debate, you've got the Tea Party flexing their muscles. They're opposed to Obamacare. To a great degree, the opposition to Obamacare is on a couple of different levels. Part of it's libertarian. Part of it is just free market. Libertarian people don't like to be told what to do by the government. Free market people don't want the market artificially squeezed or constricted because it is the deeply held belief of the free market people that a free market meets its own needs. Without getting into, the invisible hand of Adam Smith. The invisible hand of Adam Smith, let me just say one thing about that. If you look at the city and I'm sure you've gotten sick of hearing me talk about all the empty buildings in town, but what would the invisible hand have to say about these empty buildings? It would suggest that these buildings would naturally fill up businesses if there was not some outside pressure from the government, regulations, taxes, this type of thing. So there is a natural ambition within every person to better themselves, right? Now, some people think that they're going to better themselves through, state aid, welfare, or whatever. Other people want to do it through the capitalistic process. But, anyway, this is just kind of an example. Anyway, I've got a little bit of this fight for the Tea Party that has broken out into Texas. And Texas cuts off funding for Planned Parenthood. Now, of course, part of it is on legal grounds. They're saying that the Planned Parenthood, the way they're running their business is illegal. A ghoul is a person who trades in body parts. A ghoul is a person who is involved with corpses. It's a ghoulish activity. But underneath that is a wholesale opposition to abortion. Now, it's not just the issue of religious belief or atheists or agnostics who are opposed to the idea of killing fetuses. It's also, once again, deeper than that. It's also a market issue or economic issue. You're killing people that could come into the economy and take part in the economy, pay taxes and all this. So, I think it's worth considering what's going on right now. It is a fight for the soul of the party, but it's also a fight to express their beliefs and revolutionize America. So anyway, here's a little bit on this cutting off of funding for Planned Parenthood. I hope all of that makes sense. I'm trying to offer it up in a way that makes a little, it's just not just the surface level. A lot of times abortion protesters are seen as religious fanatics who have this irrational attachment to fetuses when it's so much bigger than that. Check this out.
In case you are keeping count at home right now, that includes, besides Texas now, Louisiana, North Carolina, Arkansas, Alabama, Utah, New Hampshire, Indiana, and Ohio. Now, all of these are examples of states that have tried to rein in state Medicaid funding. In other words, just the amount of Medicaid money they get to stop funding Planned Parenthood. That does not kill it off at the national level. Keep in mind that it has many discretionary funding prerogatives in Washington that would simply not kill it off, but just to choke it at the local level here, which even at the local level wouldn't kill it off. But the fact of the matter is this Planned Parenthood has been a galvanizing force within the Republican Party, particularly among the likes of Ted Cruz and, as I said, Bobby Jindal, who's facing a judge slapping him down for going too far. Steve Forbes on that and what this means. Steve, what do you think?
Well, I think it just goes to show in the base of the Republican Party and indeed among some independents, there's real outrage about what those videos showed. And the question is, okay, what can you do about it? And so they're trying to find legal remedies, both on the local level and federal level, to cut this thing off. As you know, Neil, the federal government is not supposed to fund abortions. That's been true since the 1970s with the Hyde Amendment. And so Planned Parenthood, because money is fungible, has been getting around that. So this is a legal reaction to Planned Parenthood running around that legal prohibition going back to the 70s on abortion.
Now, we should be clear. Federal monies, we're told, with Planned Parenthood do not go for abortions. But as you said, money is fungible. And we do know that Planned Parenthood, as an overseeing organization, looks at abortions and handles abortions. So where do taxpayers draw the difference of the line?
Well, that's what this is all about. And in terms of a Planned Parenthood, what Congress
talking about fungibility, if someone has $1,000 and I give them $100 and I say, don't spend this on alcohol, what difference does it make if they spend the other $1,000 that they have on alcohol? You see what I mean? So they're getting funding from the government, and it's somewhat of an illusion to say that it's not going into Planned Parenthood because or into abortions. Once you put it in your account, it mixes in with the rest of the money.
What it's trying to do is saying, since money is fungible, since you're getting around the spirit of the 1970s law, we'll cut you off and put the money for clinics that provide health services around the country. Planned Parenthood's not the only one in the business of health services, and that's what the Republicans are trying to make the point about.
So wouldn't Republicans be wiser or have a more doable, winnable strategy, not entirely defunding Planned Parenthood, because that, I guess, seems to be an uphill battle, but defunding those efforts that even hint of fungibly going toward abortions or this type of activity?
Well, they could put language in, if they can't defund Planned Parenthood as a whole by attaching to other legislation that the White House would consider a must. You could put in a stronger language, which would give local governments efforts to attack Medicaid funding that may be going to funding abortions like at Planned Parenthood.
All right. Steve, you could just hang on there. I want to bring viewers up to speed on a late-breaking news development we're following here. We have now the state of Texas effectively saying, Planned Parenthood, in our state, you are persona non grata. You cannot be allowed to operate in our state. But Steve, what that harkens back to is among the 8 to 12 other states that have toyed with this, invariably a judge stops them in Florida. No less than 3 cities, as soon as the governor hinted he wanted to do this, 3 cities preempted him by challenging a foreseen effort. So this doesn't end without a big fight, right?
Well, anyway, so the argument is, and think about how people talk about abortion. You've got a right to abortion. A woman has a right to abortion. It's a rights issue, unless you argue that there's a countervailing right. There's another right. The child, the fetus has a right. But I think that, you know, this has been kind of like co-opted into a religious argument. And the people that don't want to hear about that, which obviously are a lot of people, simply dismiss that. Well, I'm not religious, or I don't really see the religious significance here. You know, these people have their freedoms. I think that's the wrong way to look at it, in part because there's an economic, and I wrote this article in kind of tried to figure out how much money we've lost from taxes. Now you might say, well, that's a very insensitive thing to do, to try to figure out what happened to all these lost fetuses and how much money they could have brought us. But what I was really trying to do is to understand the impact of abortion, which is massive. I think we've lost out of tens of trillions of dollars in taxes, but we could be competing with places like China, and we wouldn't have to have illegal immigrants flooding over the border if the theory is that they're coming into work and we have to have them. So I think it's good to look at these. I mean, I personally think there's a huge religious or moral ethical issue here with abortion, but I think it pays to know who your audience is if you're arguing to them. Some people are just simply not moved by that, but they are, you know, some people are, or social conservatives, or pardon me, they are economic conservatives and social liberals. They are, have a libertarian view of this type of thing, and so they're not moved by the religious argument whatsoever. All right, so we'll take, I want to come back and talk about Paul Ryan, because I want to kind of frame what's going on in the country at the highest level. I read some articles last night that said it is the Democratic Party that's very sick. And I'll tell you about that when I get back. And my buddy Pete from Florida, that some people have commented on favorably, the guy that I refused to talk to for months after Obama was elected, after he called up to rub it in, he's going to be calling in tomorrow. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the demographic issues. We're going to come back, though. I'm going to talk to you about what's happening in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and try to understand between the two which one is in waxing or waning. That's how you talk about the moon. When the moon is growing, it's waxing. When it's getting smaller, it's waning. And we'll come back and talk about that. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, this is Kathy. I was wondering if you could answer a question if you know it. Does Medicaid, which is the welfare system, pay for abortions?
That's a good question. Not? I think what they're saying is that it doesn't, but the argument on fungibility is if you've got a big organization, it gets funding from the government. It's somewhat of an illusion to say we're not going to spend this money on an abortion, because it all the money goes into the same pot, you know?
Oh, you know, technically, I guess that might be true.
Hey,
you know, I support
Kathy,
a woman's right to choose.
I understand.
I think nowadays,
Kathy, stay on. Let's talk about this. I think it's interesting.
Well, I'm driving. I'm getting ready to drive. I was just wondering what options poor women have. I mean, you got drug abusers producing meth babies in Florida. One lady, something like 10 kids, all addicted to meth. I'm just wondering what options they have if they don't have Planned Parenthood. And, you know, there's no excuse for getting pregnant nowadays. As far as I'm concerned, you can control that. But what options do they have, Kelly? Rich women have lots of options.
Yeah, I understand. Well, that's a good question. But that some people say it's a Holocaust against blacks, because they're building more of these abortion clinics in black neighborhoods, and some black leaders are offended by that.
I've never heard that, and I don't understand that logic. But I'm just wondering what options they have.
Let's talk. We're just about on the air. Hold on. This is an interesting point. Hold on one second. We're just about to go on the air.
Your voice matters on AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell.
It's, of course, Kelly here, and I've got Kathy on the line, and she wants to know if we're cutting off funding or shutting down these abortion clinics, what happens to the rights of poor women to have abortions? Kathy?
They've got the right, Kelly.
Well,
I'm just saying they don't
opportunity.
Have the money. I mean, right? They've had the right for 40 years. I'm wondering what options they have when the clinics are shut down. All you're doing is limiting the options of poor women. Rich women can find doctors who'll do it.
Well, you know, there's a number of people that want to adopt every year. There are millions of couples that are, for whatever reason, infertile or for health reasons, they can't do it. But those would adopt these babies if the women gave birth and put them up. And that's a fact.
Kelly, that, you know, there are so many kids in foster care. There are so many kids that go unadopted. There are kids that are left with.
Wait a second. I happen to
have good parents.
Kathy, I've studied and written on this, so I really had to marshal my facts together. And the
Kelly,
fact.
Kelly, is there anything you haven't studied and written on? My God.
You
must be 90 years old, boy.
Well, Kathy, I won't say the same thing to you because women tend to be a little touchy. But hey, you know, when I was pumping out an article every weekend, so it gave me an opportunity to grab a bunch of research stuff, kind of try to digest it and pump out an article. And so I did go through a lot of different issues, whatever was struck my fancy at the time. But here's the thing. If you want to look at it, the market has a problem. The problem in the market is it's a human problem. These women have kids that they either don't want, can't afford. They have health complications or whatever. But there's a solution. There's a lot of people out there that would like to adopt. If we hadn't developed the abortion industry and developed the adoption industry, what would the country look like?
Gosh, I guess there'd be lots of kids in foster homes.
Not foster homes. There's adopters.
You know, I'm just asking, I'm not familiar with the welfare system. I've never been on it, luckily. And I'm wondering if Medicaid pays for abortions. And I guess the answer to that is no.
Well, but that's the issue of fungibility that I was mentioning off the air. I give you $1 million. You have $2 million total. Half of that comes from me. And I say, I don't want you to spend it on anything that I find offensive. And you say, that's okay. But let's just say all the money goes into the same pile.
No, let's just say it doesn't. Let's just say I'm a private person making private donations to Planned Parenthood that'll give a woman an option to choose if she wants. It's not government money. It's private money that has been handed to that organization just because you guys are doing what you're doing and denying these poor women the option of terminating a pregnancy. So I am dedicating my money to that. The rest of you can pay for all the other stuff women need. I think it can be separated.
Well, but it's somewhat of an illusion if it's all going into the same pile.
Well, maybe it's an illusion that it's all going into the same pile. There's a separate amount for private donations where you fund what you believe in, and then the rest of the money sticks with the rules of the last 40 years that say governments can't pay for abortions and the government pays for everything else. I mean, good grief. It's been a law for 40 years.
An
option that poor women ought to have because rich women already have.
I understand. But, Kathy, there's a lot of things that have been legalized that I'm sure you, over the centuries, that you would totally disagree with.
Not much.
Slavery.
Well, yeah.
All right.
That's true.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Kathy.
Anyhow, I'm just wondering about all those welfare questions. I just think the Republicans are coming down hard on poor women.
Oh, those poor women. Okay. Thanks a lot, Kathy.
That's what it feels like to me.
Thanks a lot, Kathy. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, what's up?
Kathy, I'm just going to put it to you like this, baby. If you're a private individual and you're donating money to abortions, you're sick. Totally sick. Secondly, lady, I do believe in a woman's choice, the choice for her to close her damn legs.
I guess I heard that one. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Yeah, this is Thomas. I was wondering if you've read because you seem to be fairly well read. Have you ever read the book Freakonomics?
Freakonomics, I've got it, but I haven't read it. I've got to make a shameful confession. That's the Freakonomics is the guy, that's Silver, right? I can't hear you.
It's Donahue and Levitt.
But I mean, they're basically crunching a lot of numbers to come up with stuff. What did you gain from the book?
Well, what they were able to show is that the five states that allowed abortion in 1970.
We can barely hear you.
Roe v. Wade.
We can barely hear you talking to your phone.
What they showed was that the five states that began to allow abortion prior to Roe v. Wade in 1970, about 18 to 19 years later, began to experience a decline in crime rate.
Right.
Beginning in 19 years after Roe v. Wade, the rest of the country began to experience the same decrease in crime.
So the question is, do you personally believe that abortion should be allowed to help reduce crime?
I don't believe it should be used to reduce crime, but it's one of the things you asked, what would this country look like?
Okay, that's a good point. Now, but here's the thing. What if instead of putting money into these clinics, we put money into adoption, instead of abortion mills, adoption mills? Tens of, or you know, millions of couples every year can't adopt because most of the babies get aborted as opposed to given birth to and handed out for adoption. There's over a million abortions every year. There's only 50,000 adoptions. Do the math. It's easy to figure out. I think we'd have a much stronger country if we followed the other way.
So you're saying that white America would end up adopting all of these children?
Are you kidding? Of course.
Relatively.
Hollywood would adopt most of them, be just to show how anti-racist they are.
But you know that there's a correlation between the crime rate. I mean, it's just, all it's showing is that there's an unintended consequence to abortion.
Oh,
so you know that the crime rate's gone down, so this tells you who's having an abortion.
Okay, so the abortion rate in the black community is three times the rate it is anywhere else, and the crime rate is higher in the black community. Why don't you allow these babies to be adopted out into the whole racial pool? And that way, these kids are not going to grow up in a place that that is producing more criminals.
I would be fine ending abortion if we live in a country that told women that they were going to help them. What we do is we live in a country where we say, we want you to have a child. We don't want you to abort the child. But the minute that child is born, people who are not traditional conservatives anymore, but the new American Conservative Party, they want you to have the child, but they don't want to help you take care of the child. We want all these really poor women to have kids, but we don't want to take care of them.
Well, I mean, I guess that's another argument. The sad thing is I'm running out of time. Thanks for the call. Great call. All right, folks, let's take a break here, and we'll be right back.
Chilly night, it's time to climb on the...
All right, so we just have a few seconds here. Here's a little bit on Paul Ryan. Check this out.
United States. We've got people like Peter Sutherland who are telling us that sovereignty is just an illusion. We've got people like Paul Ryan, and we're going to talk about the speaker race in just a moment. They're pushing him for speaker. He says that America is not a country. It's simply an idea. And he's going to change what that idea is all about, of course, with open borders and with other policies that he's putting through here. But let's look at what's going on in Europe right now. Let's follow the flow.
All right. So this is a very long clip from Prison Planet, which is the Alex Jones network. But I want to get into the idea that the Republicans have to choose someone who's a moderate. They have to choose someone who's middle of the road so they can get along. How did that work out with McCain? How did that work out with Romney? Paul Ryan is not the answer. He's part of the problem. You cannot satisfy a base that has elements that are true to the origin of the party if you're always choosing moderates. I mean, it's like having a Democrat Party light. And so there's got to be a fight for a speaker who is conservative enough to satisfy this Freedom Coalition, and yet can still reach across the aisle. The piece de resistance of this idea is Ronald Reagan. Conservative enough to have the ideals of the movement inside of him to motivate him, and pure-hearted enough, I guess, or wise enough to say that we can't compromise our principles, but still charming and enough to make friends on the other side, and also a person who could really get deals done because he knew how to deal make. That's what we need, a second coming of Reagan. That's not going to happen, but we need someone with some of that skill set. 6:59, we're going to come back with Walt Rubel and pick it up again. AM Las Cruces 1450, 523-1450.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Kelly, I want you to listen to something real quick. Very often we can learn a lot by drawing parallels in thinking, and sometimes that illustrates a point.
All right.
So what if in immigration we called that planned citizenship, and when you deport an illegal alien, you refer to that as a societal abortion? What kind of a twist would that throw these idiots into if you called it that? I'm talking about the anti-abortion people and the immigration people.
Well, I mean, it's like kind of like Trump, maybe. Trump kind of opened up the new way of seeing things.
Yes. And another thing, you're an expert on this. I heard you said you did a bunch of papers on this. Kelly, have you ever looked into how many women get multiple abortions?
A number of them.
And so that would be a way of attacking it as well, is by saying, all right, ladies, every woman in America is allowed one abortion in her lifetime. What would that do to the whole picture overall? Just trying to think about that.
Well, I mean, if you've got a go ahead.
What I think happens is you have a lot of these strippers and prostitutes and lowlifes that are in this cycle of going out and getting pregnant and having abortion after abortion after abortion. And is Planned Parenthood making money off of it? Are they enriching themselves off of that cycle?
I'm sure they are. Listen, I got to take a break. Yeah. Thanks for the call, man. It is 7:06, and have Walt Rubel in the studio. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Feeling very fall-like out there today.
Yeah, it feels a little nippy out there. And all right, so you heard a little bit about the Paul Ryan, we were debating earlier about approaching abortion. They're talking about shutting down abortion in Texas with Planned Parenthood. Maybe looking at it a little differently, not as a religious or moral issue, but as an economic issue.
No, I missed that part. So what is the economic argument for shutting down abortion clinics?
The economic argument is that the more workers you have in an economy, all things being equal, the stronger the economy is, because more people are taking part in the economy, paying in taxes. And, you know.
So underpopulation is the concern.
No, it's just that. Well, I mean, where does China get its strength from?
Well, that's what I'm saying, underpopulation.
No,
the argument that you're making, is we need more babies. I think the opposite is true. I think overpopulation is the concern.
You've reduced my argument in a way that just let me finish.
Yeah.
The fact is that human beings are assets. There's no reason to kill assets.
That was the agrarian thinking, you know, was we need, you know, lots of sons, and we need to, you know, so that we have farmhands. I'm not sure that.
You need people in an economy to work, to have jobs, to open businesses, to pay taxes?
Some.
What do you mean some? Well, isn't that where it comes from?
Is your argument that you need unlimited, having 15, 20 children is the answer?
Well, since that's not part of the equation, I don't need to defend that. I don't think most people are going to have an unlimited. I mean, I don't think most people use abortion as their only means of birth control.
Well, I hope not. That would be horrible.
Well, I mean, at least you admit that abortion's horrible.
Well, of course it is. I mean, yeah.
But anyway, so it is an asset. In the same way, let's just put it into economic and not religious terms. Trees are an asset. You know, farmland is an asset. Water is an asset. Human beings to work on all these things and produce jobs and such are an asset, obviously. Now, you might have a global warming or a Malthusian argument against that, but you can't argue that you need workers within an economy for it to be functional.
And I think I'm going to help you out, or try to help you out. I think you can make an argument that in an aging economy or in an aging population, which we clearly have, Yes, you need new, younger workers. I mean, when you look at the Social Security demographics, the fact that, you know, there used to be 10 workers or whatever for every one person, how that shrunk. Yeah, that to me is a valid argument. But just the notion that we're going to in any way address that through closing down Planned Parenthood clinics, I think is a little ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it would be directly on point, wouldn't it?
I think if you want more kids, that you address that through less contraception, that you address that through, you know, the first thing you do is you address that through social programs that help people take care of those kids. And certainly the people who are most supportive of, you know, abortion don't want that, or against abortion.
I think you're getting a little carried away on that. It's the source of that type of help. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Go ahead, Pedro.
Hey, Walt.
Hey, Pedro.
How does somebody who is pro-immigration consolidate his thoughts and resolve the conflict as far as being pro-abortion? After all, a baby is just an immigrant trying to get into the U.S. through a different means.
That's good. That's a nice one.
I'm going to go religion here. I mean, a baby certainly has more human rights than regardless of what your nationality is. And as far as me being pro-immigration, I mean, I'm not for open borders, unlimited, everybody comes in. I'm for a sensible policy, which we don't have.
Well, I'm for sensible policy concerning immigration. It's either the birth canal or the irrigation canal. they're just trying to get into the U.S. one way or differently from the others.
Thanks for the call, Peter. I mean, he's got a point there. The arguments that are made for the bringing in of immigrants will work for the most part on bringing in more and less abortions and more. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Oh, hi, Kelly. It's Lydia.
What's going on?
About the Planned Parenthood. I wanted to speak back to Kathy's point. In New Mexico, we have 165 community health centers that will help offer services to poor women compared to 6 Planned Parenthood places, and you can get full health care. The woman can for herself and her whole family. She can see a doctor. At Planned Parenthood, you only see a doctor if you're getting the $500 abortion. And I feel like people, I don't know where they get their facts from, but I know that Planned Parenthood has a Washington lobby, an executive director with a 6-figure income. Our little, even in Las Cruces, you know, our Department of Health and the other community health, Ben Archer, La Clinica, we take care of our women, like the whole woman and her family, with good local medical doctors. And this idea that poor women won't have health care, I just don't know where they're getting their facts from.
Well,
I'm sorry,
I mean,
I'm a little emotional about
that.
Yeah,
Lydia, it's all right, Lydia. You don't have to apologize for that. But I mean, the fact, well, most people get their facts, or they do research through popular culture. So they hear somebody say something, they might see it on the internet, they could hear a celebrity or someone say something, and they, you know, Rosie O'Donnell, whatever. If it's on their topic, if they happen to agree with them in general, they might just take that up as true information. But Walt, you deal with this all the time. You're in the news business as opposed to the rumor business.
Yeah, well, and the only thing I would say to her point is that it's absolutely true. In New Mexico, there are no Planned Parenthood clinics at all south of I think I-40. I mean, they're all in the north part of the state. So for us, that's right. But in other parts of the country, it is where poor women go to get their reproductive
health care. No, I disagree.
Well, okay.
You need to look at a map I have that shows. I think that's a myth that in the, you know, Planned Parenthood targets urban minority centers. Well, I don't want to get off on that, but I think it's a myth that the community health centers are more prevalent than Planned Parenthood in all parts of the country. And I can bring you a map. Well, I will. I'll drop it off at your office.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the call, Lydia. Thanks for the call. The Kelly kind of shows this.
Jerry. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Jerry. Yeah, go ahead. What's up?
I have a question for Mr. Walt. Mr. Walt, you said that it would turn into an aquarium, a farming system. Okay, I'm sorry, I can't speak.
He did not. Wait, hold on, Jerry. He didn't say that. He said that such an idea was emblematic or symbolic of that type of a system. He didn't say that we would have to go back to farming.
No, that's where I'm going to get to my point right there is we are actually farming human parts now. So aren't we in that area right already?
Soylent Green. Soylent Green is people.
Yeah. So aren't you, when you choose and you select who is going to live and die, isn't that kind of like going out to the garden and pulling weedings?
Well, when you say you choose, I don't choose anyone. The mother is.
I'm saying when the powers that be allow for certain individuals or groups of individuals to be basically selectively allowed to live, and they sell that to the lower status of individuals, and I'm not going to say class because I hate class of systems.
Wait, when you say sell, what do you mean they sell that?
They go out and they promise, we're going to give you free this, we're going to give you free that, okay, because now you can get it here.
Jerry, hold on. I mean, I know where you're going. I know that's the allegation. I think the allegation is discredited. We're just not going to agree. You're making an allegation that I don't think is true.
I'm not going to agree with you. That's good because
Jerry,
I think
what is your
life
point?
Is precious.
Jerry, we're running out of time on the segment. What's your point?
Like I say, I think I disagree with him, and we always will, because I think human life is precious. It's a gift from God.
All right, so don't abort any babies. Thanks for the call. All right, I just want to make one point, Walt. What Lydia said is true. They find more abortion clinics have been built in the ghetto or in this poorer area. So isn't that a holocaust among the poor?
Is it a holocaust among the poor?
The blacks' leaders are saying, for you know, these abortion mills are popping up in the ghetto like weeds, and you know, they're taking us down.
Abortion mills popping up in the ghetto like weeds.
That's a metaphor, by the way.
I understand it's a metaphor, but it paints a picture of rapid, explosive growth.
All right,
I'm not sure that's true.
All right, but the point is that there tends to be, from what I understand, more abortion providers in the black areas than other areas. And we know that the black abortion rate is about three times higher than the rest of the populations. But, I mean, I don't know.
And that is true.
Yeah.
And that is. So does that mean that this is an organized conspiracy to get rid of black babies is where you're going with?
Well,
that.
I think Black Lives Matter is the argument,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And my answer is no, it's not.
It's an accident.
It is, to the extent that it is true. Well, and I've conceded that there no question that there are more abortions, but that, you know, the numbers on that are what they are. Why that is the case, I would argue that there's a whole lot of reasons, and it gets back to what I've said before, a lack of a social net or a social structure to take care of, you know, when you're a 13 or 14 year old girl, you don't, and you're living in the inner city and you don't have a job and you're not doing real well in school, you feel like you don't have a whole lot of options there.
It's the result of institutional racism is what you're saying?
I'm saying it's the result of a lot of different things. It's not this organized conspiracy that let's put abortion mills in black neighborhoods so that we can thin the herd. I don't think that's the case.
All right. So folks, you heard it from Walt. Now, take a little board. We'll come back here, and you want to continue on with this, or do you have a topic that's burning up inside?
Well, I think we need to follow up with the Tea Party, just what we talked about last week,
right.
Just because there's, you know, new information,
okay.
A little bit.
All right, so 7:19, come back and talk about the Tea Party, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and don't have the text machine, but so we're going to come back and talk about the Tea Party.
fly.
On a cold.
The child is born in the ghetto, and his mama cries.
Well, it's 7:23. Kelly O'Connell's and AmLos Cruces 1450. I've got Walt Rubel here, and he had some information for you about the Tea Party and the fact that they were not allowed to do their presidential forum in the city. City Hall.
Mayoral forum.
Well,
presidential is not everybody's mind, but it's the mayoral
forum. All right.
When I was in last week, that was took the whole hour of the second part of the show. And I think the first part, too, if I'm right. The fact that they had been denied by City Hall. And what UDLV Hill, city spokesman, told Heath Hausman, and we reported in the Sun News, is that not that they were too partisan, which is what Bev told us, and I'm not I believe Bev. I think that's probably what happened. But anyway, that's not the city's official line now. What they're telling us now is that it had nothing to do with partisanship, that it was merely they had made a decision that City Hall was being used too much by outside groups. And so they're just going to cut that off.
What the heck is an outside group?
Well, anybody who's not city. So we paid however many millions of dollars to build it.
And now only the city can use it. I find that to be a bogus reason, as I agree with you. It's an after-the-fact excuse. And in addition to that, they did it midstream. If they wanted to be fair, they would have waited until the campaign season was over.
I completely agree. Go ahead.
And I'm just going to say, I know that you and I agree on this 100%, because even if you're going to do something that seems a little bit radical, at least do it in a way that people can say, well, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. But instead, you get through and you have these, you know, some of these groups are can do their forum, and then the Tea Party comes along and we say, oops, the entire policy has changed. It just so happens it's during the president or the mayoral race. I think that's begs credulity.
I do, too. I completely agree. And I think the fact that they're saying, well, you know, they got their requests in a little bit earlier, so they're going to be grandfathered in. And we suddenly decided, you know, between the, you know, 1 week or a couple of days, however long it was between they got theirs in and you got yours in, that now we have too many. I mean, you're right. I mean, it just.
So was Ken Miyagashima involved in this decision? We may never know.
I hope not. I believe not, and I hope not.
He's avoiding this show like a person. What's that disorder where people can't have wheat?
Oh, gluten. I know what you mean. It's
like a gluten intolerant person avoids a pizza.
Yeah.
So anyway, what else is going on in the city, Walt?
Well, obviously the big election, and
let's do a little bit of horse racing analysis here. What do you see trending? And we do have a phone call. We'll come back and get Walt's. Kind of his reaction so far to the races. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Neil. How you guys doing?
Neil Hooks, what's up, buddy?
Hey, I got two things for Walt and you. The first one is about the abortion clinics in the ghettos. If the abortion clinics that focus in the ghettos are not due to racism, which I don't think they are, by the way, then why isn't the same logic with the police officers patrolling mostly in ghettos? Why is that racism and not the abortion clinics?
Walt,
that's the first point.
Well, let Walt answer here, Neil.
Well, because I think you're looking to the motivation involved. So on one hand, do you say, is the motivation that we're going to put out? I mean, that really is sinister sci-fi stuff that we're
black
going to
Holocaust,
put.
Yeah. Black Holocaust.
Thank you. That we're going to intentionally put abortion clinics in these communities because we don't like these people.
But doesn't it mean black lives don't matter, or is a fetus not alive?
That is the question.
Well, I don't think you heard me. I said I don't think it's because of racism that abortion clinics are in ghettos.
I heard you just fine, Neil. And I'm saying, of course, you don't think that, and nobody else does, because it's this incredibly sinister place you have to go to believe that.
You're not answering my point, though.
Well, I was getting there, and I got cut off.
Go for it, man.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
sorry.
So that is the motivation on one side. The motivation on the other side is entirely different. And nobody thinks that it – I shouldn't say nobody, but I'll speak for myself
How
here.
Dare you stare at me when you say that?
I don't think that it is motivated primarily by racism when we have what we have seen as a – I believe a spike or an increase in unarmed black men being shot by and killed by white officers. I do not believe that's primarily motivated by racism, but I do think that race factors into it. And so I just think you're comparing apples and oranges, Neil.
So when blacks shoot and kill officers at a rate six times what police officers shoot and kill blacks, is that more racist on the blacks or less racist on the cops or what?
I don't know how you do that sliding scale. You're asking me, you know, where it is on that continuum. I have no idea.
All right. I already made my point there. My next point is about the Tea Party. You know, the reason why the Tea Party is not as impartial as the League of Women Voters and the NAACP is because even their leader, when they're interviewed, they say that the left is destroying us. Now, I happen to agree with that, but when you claim to be nonpartisan and you specifically identify the left as the people who you are against, you're not nonpartisan anymore.
That's true, but getting to the specific issue, does that mean they shouldn't be able to use City Hall the same way the other groups do?
All I'm saying, I think they should be able to use City Hall, but all okay. I'm saying is that they need to be a little bit more discreet and simply talk about the issues, certainly in public, when they're talking about politics, not specifically identify who they're for or against.
Well, I mean, that may be true, but I think these groups exist for partisan purposes. So, I mean, you know.
Discretion is not the.
Of course they do.
Come on.
The NAACP and the League of Women Voters are probably leaning further to the left, and the Tea Party leans to the right. But you can't identify specifically. Isn't that what nonpartisan's all about?
Well, I mean, there's something to what you're saying, and they need to be a little more politic, a little bit wiser in how they come across. I mean, I think it's a problem when people believe they know the truth, and they're just going to get up and state the truth no matter how unpopular it is. You've got to, like you say, enter into the political process and also be a little bit mindful of American byways and folkways of how we communicate political ideas in these type of settings.
Yeah, roger.
Thanks for
All
the
right,
call.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Mike.
Briefly.
Hey, Kelly. How can Hillary be for Black Lives Matter and get the Margaret Sanger Award at the same time?
Maybe for her outstanding work in eugenics. I don't know.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not really. Anything
okay,
else?
Okay, Margaret Sanger.
Yeah, but go on.
Can you tell us a little bit about Margaret Sanger?
I will, of course. All right, but let's take a little break here. Margaret Sanger was a eugenics expert. She was a hero of abortion. She was a Malthusian, and but, you know, she's a hero to the abortion movement now, but she was also involved in eugenics. A lot of those people. But you know what? I mean, the guy called up about Freakonomics. I don't know if you heard him, but Freakonomics says you allow abortion, and abortion is happening at a higher rate in these black communities. And what happens 20 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later is that the crime rate goes down. And so isn't that an argument for abortion? And I'm thinking that's going back to eugenics.
Yeah. Isn't it? Is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, folks, 7:32, got Walt Rubel here. And what do you want to stick on this? You want to get into something else?
You know, I was wanting to get into the whole national stuff, what you were talking about earlier. With,
let's do a little bit of horse race
right. we,
commentary.
Right.
And then we'll do that. And then we'll get into the national. So 7:33, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, Black Lives Matter. We'll be right back.
Cause if there's one thing she in the ghetto. People, don't you?
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, this is Neil again. Could you please try and persuade Walt to publish my article on the Tea Party?
That's a yes, Neil.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye. So, I mean, do you have any local observations? We're here with Walt, 736. Walt is the editorialist at the Sun News. All right, so you have any observations of the local races, anything that's kind of like developing?
Yeah, there have been a lot of forums. There have been a lot of things going on. There hasn't really been a main storyline yet in terms of the mayor's race and the city council races is what we're talking about. The Chamber of Commerce has jumped in. They've endorsed their candidates.
Who are their candidates?
Their candidates are Richard Hall, Philip Van Veen, Eli Guzman, and Miguel Silva. And so they've got their ads are out on the radio. I don't know if that's going to make a huge difference. I've heard some of them. Basically, they're all the same. They say, you know, a thriving community needs a strong business, and then therefore we endorse Miguel. So they don't tell you one reason why they endorse or one thing that he did or one reason why you should vote for him, other than this just general principle that we need a strong business community, vote for Miguel Silva. So I don't know. I think obviously a lot of this, you've got a two-time incumbent in Ken Miyagashima. So anytime that's the case, a lot of the election is a referendum on what kind of job he's done for the last 8 years. This is a nonpartisan race, which means that the parties are not involved. The Democratic, you don't have to declare as a Democrat or a Republican. In fact, Greg Smith, I believe, is an independent. So this is the one election where parties don't matter, where we don't have primaries. And we have a three-party or a three-person race for mayor, Gina Ortiz. And
so how does Gina affect the race?
I don't know. I don't think she can win. That's the other thing is we don't have polling. So, you know, I'm pulling this out of observations and people I talk to,
right.
But, you know, so then the question is, who does she help and who does she hurt? She is presenting herself as a businesswoman, as, you know, somebody who opposed the minimum wage increase. And so that would tell you that she would potentially take votes away from Miguel. But as we were talking off the air, I think her big thing as the newcomer, and certainly that she's using as a selling point, is the fact that she would be the first female Hispanic mayor of Las Cruces. And so does she pull in some of those women votes that traditionally vote Democratic and that maybe would have otherwise gone to Ken? I mean, I think there really is a wild card there that I can't figure out.
So what is Ken's argument when what is his argument in his speeches, in his,
sure,
his ads and stuff? That what's the theme that you've detected?
Well, like I said, he is a two-time mayor,
yeah,
or two-time term incumbent. And so his argument has to be that the city is growing under my leadership, that we've come out of this recession, that we are stronger financially than we were before.
Aren't we crawling, leaving a trail of blood behind us?
That would be the opposing argument.
Have we grown in the last 8 years? Your bird's eye view, your knowledge of the facts and also your impression.
Well, sure, because you're talking about the very depths of the recession, that, you know, when you go back to 8-10 years. And so, yes, we've come out of that. Have we come out of it as robustly, as strongly as we could have, as others around us have? Probably not.
Is it fair to compare it to wheelchair race? The way we're coming out of this recession?
I don't know. I mean,
that's a yes, folks.
Okay.
Do you think so? I mean,
I just look
around the city. Things don't look that bad to me. But what about the empty? Do you have any idea how many empty? I know you don't know the exact number,
yeah.
But if you had to ask to answer, it's not a big town. How many empty commercial properties do we have?
There are some, no question. I guess the question is, when you compare us to other cities our size, do we have a lot more?
But why do we have so many? I mean, or do you see, you're saying that all cities do?
Yeah, I think that not all cities, but I think, yeah, you go to most cities. I know Silver City is grappling with this in their downtown area. How do we keep those storefronts filled? I think the retail economy is just shifting. People are buying more stuff online. Bricks, it's tougher to make a go with a bricks and mortar store.
Well, that's what Ken Miyagashima blamed this economy on. He says it's the online economy is harming us.
Well, I think as far as the city, there's no doubt that's true. That gets into the sales tax or what we have, gross receipts tax here. But, yeah.
All right. So we'll come back and I guess we'll shift on to the national scene. 742 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450, 523, 1450.
An angry young man take a look at you.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, good morning. How you doing?
Good. Sergio, what's up?
Yeah. I just want to comment real quick off the air. You could put my comment on the air if you want, but weren't you just discussing about the empty buildings, you know?
Yeah.
In the city, your guest said all the cities have them. I agree, but, you know, we shouldn't have to follow suit with other cities. Remember what Kennedy said? Some people ask why, and I say, why not?
So why not have more empty buildings? Is that
no,
the...
No, why not? No.
I'm joking.
Why not be out of the box, think out of the box, and not have these empty buildings,
well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, the approach that I heard Walt saying was almost leads me to believe we could accept it and just blame it on the internet, which, I mean, ultimately, that's not the answer to our problems. We got to have something better than that.
Of course not, yeah.
Walt?
Well, you know, I've been here 9 years, and I have seen a slight digression on overall. Taxes going up and things going down, you know, all around as far as city infrastructure. But I'll tell you something, you know, what really disturbs me is that the potential that this city and county has is beyond limits. You know what I mean? It's just incredible, and we're not seeing it. That's very disturbing.
Well, here's my question. We were told a couple of years ago we brought on 300 jobs during the year in the county. That just seems, for a town this size, to be minuscule.
It is. It's a drop in the bucket, you know. It really is. It's literally a drop in the bucket.
Well, let me put you on hold. You can say your comments on the air. No, not no. I mean, I get all my votes, all of my votes. It's Kelly, and we do have Sergio here. Sergio, yeah, you had a comment to make about JFK, and instead of saying let's accept this empty buildings, to say why shouldn't we accept full buildings?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when he wanted to go to the moon, people were saying why, and he said why not, and it's the same thing as far as I'm concerned. I see it this way, yeah. People say, you know, we're going to accept those empty buildings. I say we shouldn't, just because other cities do. Because this county has potential that most people just can't fathom.
Well,
the only point I would make is it's not that we or anybody else accept it. It's that there is a changing economy. Those buildings used to be stores.
But I mean, isn't that saying we accept it because that's the reality in front of us?
We accept reality, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so how about the things that are in the city? They say they don't like to bring stores from outside, you know, these chain stores, whatever they call them, franchise stores. Mm. They don't like to bring them here because this is one of the hardest places to start a business. Have you heard that?
Well, I know that the city council rejected zoning for Walmart when they tried to build on Valley and Tashiro. Miguel and Ken both voted the same way on that. So there's nothing to distinguish them. I disagree with that. I thought that was, you know, clearly that you talk about anti-business. I mean, there's a prime example, but they did that because it was Walmart. You know?
So thanks for the call, Sergio. All right. So let's talk national. Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
Speaker or somebody else for speaker?
Well, I made the point a few weeks ago that it doesn't matter. You can make Louis Gohmert your speaker. If the problem is that you can't get bills out of the Senate, you're not going to solve that problem in the House.
Okay, so you can't get bills out of the Senate. Now there's a problem in the Senate, right?
Well, if that's the problem, I mean, I don't see
I'm
it
asking
as a problem.
You.
But yes, it's
an answer or what?
It's like if your football team, take my beloved Denver Broncos, who are doing great on defense and horrible on offense, it's like firing the defensive coordinator in order to solve that.
Is Peyton done?
Oh, yeah, he is.
He threw three interceptions the last game.
Yeah, I know. It's sad.
Not
sad in a tragic, you know, but you know, he's had a great career and he's come to the end of it.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. But where was my point? I had a point there before
Manning. It doesn't matter who the speaker is because the problem's in the Senate. You're saying the problem in the Senate is actually an answer because it's keeping all these bad bills from being voted on?
I'm saying, well, an answer. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that when you pass 50-some bills out of the House saying that we're going to defund or reject or get rid of Obamacare or scrap, whatever, you know, more than 50 bills, and they all go to the Senate to die, at what point does that become gesturing, posturing? And I understand why conservatives are upset by that. I mean, that clearly is trying to placate them, and they're not stupid.
Well, I mean, at some point, you have to give voice to the more than 50% of the people in the country that I've seen in the polls who are opposed to Obamacare. Why shouldn't they be represented in the Senate as well as the House?
Well, we don't. The first thing I would say to that is I think those polls are shifting, and we don't legislate by polls. If we did, we would certainly have background checks on all gun shows and, you know, a number of other things that I would support. That's not how we legislate.
All right. So,
and it all gets down to the filibuster. I mean, that really does. And there are people on the right who are saying that in order to defund Planned Parenthood, this organization that gets a few million dollars in a multi-zillion dollar budget, in order to fight that fight, that, you know, what we should do is get rid of a filibuster rule that has been there since 1916, I believe,
mm-hmm.
almost 100 years. So we're going to reverse 100 years of tradition and work, you know, how the Senate has worked for almost 100 years to defund Planned Parenthood.
Exactly 100 years.
That's nuts. The notion that we are going to do that is nuts. But that is how frustrating. And to me, it all gets back to, you know, there is a level of sophistication and understanding that I don't think is there. For people who
the Tea Party is yokels, Freedom Coalition is a bunch of dumb rednecks, is what you're saying.
They don't understand that not all promises made during a campaign are kept. That has been the case since George Washington.
Isn't that a problem, though? We do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly Kana Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
What's up, Aaron?
Didn't the Democrats in the Senate use the atomic option or nuclear option also?
Well, I mean, they did change that rule, didn't they?
They did, only on the appointment of judges. And that is still in effect today, which I agree with, by the way.
You're saying only on what they wanted.
I think there's a difference between an appointment and a law. I think the president gets to appoint.
But it's advancing their agenda. They did it to advance their agenda. And now you're saying that Republicans shouldn't do it to advance
their agenda.
I'm saying it's different things. That one was done on judges, and that rule is still in effect. You're making this apply to every single piece of legislation.
One at a time. Aaron, I got another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Will. They did it to pass Obamacare, too. All right, that was it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
The reason why we're getting rid of John Boehner is because he's not standing up for us. And we'll take just the Marriage Act that was passed this past June. Article 1 of the Constitution, Section 1, reads, all legislation powers herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States, which shall consist of the Senate and House of Representatives. All legislation.
All right. Good point. Thank you.
Well, I missed the point. What was the point? That John Boehner was responsible for the Supreme Court decision on gay marriage?
That it's a new law and it should have come out of the Congress.
Right, but what should John Boehner have done about that?
Stop crying and stand up for...
Okay, fine. I mean, he's supposed to reverse a Supreme Court decision? That's what I'm saying. He is getting blamed
smoking,
for everything.
Smoking cigarettes, crying, okay. And, you know,
right.
Having martinis is apparently not good leadership style. 752 Kelly O'Connell. We're here with Walt Rubel. We're going to come back and finish up on the national scene.
Turn our heads and look the other way. Where the world turns. The hunger lives. Speed as the cold wind blows in the ghetto.
All right, so we're here with Walt for just a few more minutes. And so, Walt, what do you see happening now? What are the national trends that you're looking at?
Well, we have the next vote coming up is on the debt ceiling. And then December 11th is when this continuing resolution runs out. So there are two big things coming up, and the House is leaderless. If conservatives turn against Paul Ryan, there is nobody else who can win that job that I can see. The Republicans are not going to line up behind Daniel Webster.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, my question is, could they get someone who was seen as being on the right, but a little bit more tactful?
Tactful. You don't think Paul Ryan is tactful enough?
He's not on the right, according to the party.
Okay.
You're calling him on the right,
yeah.
And the people in the party don't see him as on the right.
Yeah.
They see him as a centrist.
Well, I'm basing that on the budget that he wrote. I mean, that is a pretty...
Well, knowing that budget was never going to get passed.
Maybe so, but his blueprint. I mean, it's got his name on it. I assume that he is saying, if I could, this is what I would do. And that is a very conservative budget.
All right, but he's not a conservative guy. He's working on grant, getting all these immigrants in. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
The problems you conservos are having is got such a smile on my face. I'm from ear to ear with a grin.
Well, finally, you got something to be happy about. Since your party party's in free fall.
I'll tell you what, you guys, my cup runneth over with glee at all of the goofiness that you conservatives are doing.
How did you become, we're out of time, but at what age did you become a liberal, by the way?
Oh, geez, I mean, I think, you know, probably the day I was born. I think I was born as a liberal. I am so liberal, I only make left turns.
Frankie, don't spike the football yet. There's a long way to go.
Okay, guys.
All right.
Ah, you take care.
You too, Frankie. Well, I guess they put a little bit of Marx in each one of his baby formula.
I understand there is a lot of joy and happiness on the left right now.
Well,
there
I'm
is
sure
a long way to go before the election.
Well, I mean, and we don't even know. I mean, Webb has said that the debate was cooked. The line that was fed on the emails was understood ahead of time that it was going to be shut down. The email debate with Hillary is going to be shut down through. I mean, if that's true, these guys really must feel like they're desperate. Anyway, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had Walt on. We're grateful he came on today. And we've got more coming up tomorrow for you. Tomorrow, I guess, is Judge Day. And if you know anybody who hasn't been on the show, Yeah, tell them they're more than welcome, and I can get them on at late notice if need be. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, and hope you have a great day. Ciao.
And here's Hunger Bird. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight, and forget it. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far. And his mama cries.